D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. We are awaiting Predators GM Barry Trotz. He will join us momentarily. Again, if you missed it, the breaking news courtesy of Adam Schefter right before we went to break. Sources, colon, former Cowboys head coach and NBC analyst Jason Garrett is interviewing Friday for the Tennessee Titans head coaching job. And the reaction on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com is interesting. Chad says, the one excuse I'll give Garrett is working under Jerry Jones seems like an impossible task. That probably is true. But if you're looking to excite people, I don't think Jason Garrett is the answer. But David Janes is on the line.
But relative to who? I mean, that's the...
Yes.
That would be the question, right? Nobody would excite you other than maybe Harbaugh, right?
Yes.
Can we come to that conclusion? There's not a single person that would say, I'm excited about that. So I don't know why Garrett's any different.
Well, we will pick this conversation up shortly because in the meantime, let's go to our phone line. We are pleased to be joined by Predators General Manager Barry Trotz. Hi, Barry. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing? Hope you had a good Christmas and New Year's.
Yes. Thank you for asking. We all did. So tonight, this long road stretch finally comes to an end. Seven consecutive games on the road, if you include the game at Minnesota before Christmas. The team has a chance to end that road stretch with 5 wins in 7 games tonight against the Oilers, who are always a tough challenge. But what has impressed you so far about the team's performance over the past couple of weeks in all of these road games?
Well, I think number one is resiliency, because it seems that we don't show up in the first 10 minutes and are always coming back from behind, and it's very difficult to, I'll say, consistently do that on the road to come back. I just think that the group has been very resilient. I think that Saros has given us timely saves, and same with Noonan in those games, and we've gotten contributions from different aspects of our lineup. Example, one night it's Steven Stamkos having a big night, or Ryan O'Reilly, or Philip Forsberg, and then, the next night it's, Michael Bunting's line steps up and gets us 3 or 4 points in Calgary. Or you get I love the fact that this team's come together. The other night, a guy like Nick Hague stepped up, and when there was a little bit of a cheap shot on McCarron, we were playing short in terms of our forward group because we went 11-7. And Hague recognized the importance of stepping up from the defensive standpoint, stepping up and sort of setting the record straight with the young Beecher player from Calgary for his teammate, so he didn't have to do that. And then he ends up getting good karma and scores a winning goal late in the game. So just all those aspects where the teams come together and you talk about playing for each other, they really are. Steven Stamkos blocking a shot at the end of the game the other night. So all those things are good signs that they're having fun, they're playing hard, and getting results.
Barry, around Thanksgiving, I imagine you were the most popular GM in the NHL. Based on where the team was in the standings at the time, I imagine you were fielding a lot of calls about your players. But over the past month and a half, you're one of the best teams in the league. You're firmly back in the playoff mix. So has the call volume changed? Are you receiving as many calls? Are you taking fewer calls now that the team is back in the playoff mix?
No, not at all. I think about the same, really. I think our plan hasn't changed a whole lot. I think everybody I got an opportunity to go to the World Juniors and ran into a number of the general managers, and I think everybody is just, fielding calls, trying to figure out. A lot of teams are trying to figure out if they're going to be sellers or buyers, or what's their options that they might be able to make a move, or look at selling something. So I think there's a lot of indecision in the league right now, I think we've set our plan and we're going forward with it. So
Barry, as we look ahead, you mentioned the World Junior Championships. A lot of people had their eye there. a little disappointing that the Canadian team and the American team couldn't move a little further up the bracket there. But some big moments for Brady Martin and Ryker Lee, a couple of the first-round picks. And I know Cam Reed as a defenseman isn't as a headliner, but I'm told he played very well also. How did you think your seven prospects looked in the tournament, particularly with guys at the top like Lee and Martin, who a lot of people are focused on?
Well, I think both, they're underage players. I think the impact of Brady Martin in the, especially for the Canadian team, he was that driver, that sort of drag, that his line with Michael Hage and McKenna, they really sort of set the tone. He was the guy that was going to all the difficult places, just getting feedback from a lot of the Hockey Canada officials. They all said that he had that it factor in terms of that gravitational pull that he has. He pulls people into the fights. And obviously when he got hurt, it was a little bit of a blow to Canada, because he was one of those guys that would find a way. So all the reports on Brady as the player that we thought that has a lot of substance in his game, goes to the hard areas, has a little bit of it factor, all those things seem to line up. For us, Cam Reed, an underage defenseman, was playing with Zane Parrick as really their sort of top pair in terms of the offensive part of it. And I thought Reed did really well being an underage and playing with a partner who is as talented as Preck, but hard to read. It's like playing with Roman Josi. Not everybody can do it. So I thought he did a really great job. And then I thought, Ivan Kovic coming in and really halfway through the tournament becoming sort of the number one goaltender for Canada, I thought that was really encouraging from that standpoint. And then on the American side, I think you saw people that watched, you saw the Ryker Lee's ability to get involved. The puck sort of follows him, and obviously scored a big goal to get the game tied up. Against Finland, unfortunately lost in overtime. But you could see, being an underage, how important he was in terms of driving offense for the Americans. And obviously Teddy Stiga, with his speed and his ability to be a little bit of a Swiss Army knife and play different positions, had a real good impact in the tournament. So just those between those two teams, I was really, really pleased with all those players. Really pleased with Nieminen, with who was a sixth-round pick, played a very important role for the Finns, played a lot of, and he was an underage as well. That said a lot about our prospects, having so many there that really had a lot of impact.
Let's keep on the prospects for one more question, because this is a guy that's been off the radar a little bit, and Igor Surin, who plays in the KHL. And I'm just curious how you keep tabs on a guy playing so far away, because everything that is coming back, I saw a recent article in The Athletic that he might be, he was arguably the number one prospect or the fastest rising prospect in the organization. What are your thoughts on him, and how do you follow him?
Obviously, we follow him with our Russian scout, Dennis Tarpeko. But we watch him on Instats. Our development team is watching and communicating with him. I watch on a regular basis all the stuff that they send. I've been in communication with a number of the coaches that I know that are coaching in the KHL that coach against Thurin. I talked to his coach to see how he's doing, and all those things are adding up. He's having a terrific year. He's one of those, I'll say, impact young players, arguably one of the best Russian players that are playing in the KHL this year. He's going to have a big impact on our hockey team in the future, which is really exciting. And he arguably is probably, you talk about Brady that we took as fifth overall, but Surin might be as important to our future as a franchise as anybody else.
That's exciting to hear. You got some business done while you've been in Minnesota. We were happy to see Justus Onanen sign a new 2-year deal. He's played his best hockey here in his last few starts. He's still pretty young. So how do you evaluate his future going forward, and tell us about the thought process in signing him to the next deal?
Well, I think that number one is, you know, you look at the package of Eustis. He's big and he's athletic and he's got a great work ethic. He's got all the attributes to make, you know, been very fortunate to have some tall Finnish goaltenders that have done very well for our organization. I think the fit with our Mitch Korn and Ben Vanderklok and our goaltending team has been a really good fit for him. And obviously the relationship that he has with Saros, all that I think points to the fact that, you know, he wanted to stay here. B, we wanted him to stay here because we think that there's a real good upside with him. He feels very comfortable. I think it's a contract that makes a lot of sense for both sides. Gives him a little bit of more of a window in the National Hockey League with people he trusts and works with on a daily basis. And, you know, in terms of the deal, I think it works well for both sides, in terms of length and the money in the deal. So, we're really happy that he's back, and I think our goaltending's set for the next couple of years.
Barry Trotz is with us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. And Barry, last week I asked you about Jonathan Marchessault, who remains out of the lineup because of injury. The team has won 6 of 8 without him, and he was struggling before the injury with 3 goals in 18 games. So I'm curious, has his absence made you reanalyze his fit with the team at all?
No, not really. I think you have to be fair. A couple things. Just to have very good clarity with Jonathan. Jonathan started out the trip with the group in a rehab type of situation. He hit a plateau. We had him come back and reevaluate, and the doctors have taken a little different course with him. So I'm hoping that he's back on the ice. Actually, I think he went on the ice today with Mark Berwicki, getting him back into our group. And one of the things that, you know, you look at the success that Stammers had, or the success that Forsberg's had this year, you know, in certain I'll say bits of the season where they've really taken off, and they've been playing with O'Reilly, the one guy who has the same sort of skill set, is known as a goal scorer, shooter, is Marchessault. So, and he really hasn't had that opportunity to play with O'Reilly. So maybe that happens when he gets healthy here, but he's a goal scorer. He's a competitive player, and you know, this year he got off to a little bit of a tough start, and he actually got off to a tough start last year and ended up with, I believe, 56 points, and so there's lots of good hockey left in Jonathan. So we just got to give him opportunity. It's very easy to judge. You know, we sort of got a little bit hot, and everybody's, you know, stepped it up in terms of our team game, our 5-on-5 game, our defensive game, and our goaltending. Special teams have all sort of come together at the right time, and the team's had a good run here, but you're going to need everybody, and Jonathan will be a big part of it going forward as well.
Barry, a question a lot of people have, including myself, as I've watched the team since late November reel off 13 wins in 19 games, is this sustainable? And I understand that the game is played on the ice and not on a spreadsheet, and I am a nerd, and I like to look at the numbers. And the numbers would suggest to me that at some point the team is going to come back down to earth eventually. So as you watch the team, and you know a lot more about this than I do, why do you think this run that you've been on over the past month and a half is sustainable?
Well, I think, you know, if it is going to be sustainable, it'll have to have the same type of all-in commitment that the team has put together. They're going to have the goaltending to be at a level that it's been on in terms of coming up with timely and big saves. You know, I don't know if it'll be sustainable because of our starts. I think we've been able to fight through those starts. And you know, when you have given up as many goals in the first 2 minutes of a hockey game that we have this year, I am actually amazed at the fact that we have the record that we do. So I can't answer that wholeheartedly that it is sustainable, but if it is going to have some, I'll say, some legs to it, it will have to have all those elements sort of continuing to play at a very high level. And, you know, it has in the past. A couple of years ago, we were able to do it. And last year, we weren't able to do it. So, you know, we're 41 games in or whatever it is now. I think you're going to have a buy-in from the team because they're in the mix. And when you're not in the mix, it's hard to have that buy-in. So I think the buy-in will be there. I don't know if the results will be there, but if their buy-in is there, you're going to get a good effort every night, and you know, you'll win your share of games.
Barry, just picking your brain as a hockey person who has coached against these guys over the years, the Predators have not been able to solve McDavid and Draisaitl the last handful of times they've played. Going back a few years, the Oilers have had the upper hand in this head-to-head series. How did you try to contain those two guys? It's impossible certain nights, but even relative to their performance, they have dominated the Predators. What did you try to do to hang in there with guys who can just take over games the way they can?
Well, number one, we had great success against Edmonton when Connor wasn't there, and then he arrived and the success sort of waned over the time, and then I ended up in the Eastern Conference for a number of years, 8 years. But when he came into town, two things that we always talked about is do not give them any freebies on the power play because they're just lethal. You know, if you look at our record when we play Edmonton, I'm almost, without looking at it, I could probably say that they've got at least one goal every game, maybe two power play goals every game. So you've got to make sure that you don't give them any freebies on the power play. And the other thing that I really is you're going to have a five-man back mentality with, you got to sort of muddy the track a little bit. You're going to have to stay in front of him. You're going to have to just bump him a little bit. You know, he draws penalties. He creates space. He finds Draisaitl. You're going to have great awareness and sort of gang tackle Connor. And when he's playing with Draisaitl, you got to gang tackle him, and then you have to be extremely aware of where Draisaitl is. He goes to those quiet areas, and you think he's not dangerous, but they get the puck there, and he's the best at shooting the puck from that real tough angle where you think it's sort of a safe zone where he's not dangerous. And we always just try to take away the middle of the ice as much as you can, keep him to the outside. You can't really stop him. You can't hook him. But you're going to have bodies and layers through the neutral zone as much as you can.
Predators GM Barry Trotz has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Tuesday during hockey season. The Predators have one more road game to go tonight at Edmonton. Puck drop at 8, pregame at 7, right here on 102.5 The Game. Barry, as always, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the game and get home soon.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
615-737-1025. By the way, I should note that Leon Draisaitl has 43 points in his past 17 games against the Nashville Predators. 43 points in 17 games, an average of 2.53 points per game.
I would call that a Nashville buster, right?
How many is that? How many games?
That is 17 games. 43 points in 17 games in his past 17 games.
Yeah, the Oilers have won 14 of the last 18 against the Predators, and McDavid's numbers are almost as impressive. I think he's averaging something like 2.5 points per game against Nashville. So you talk about containing, you know, just trying to slow him down, muddy the water. Nashville has not done that over the last several years. Now, under Andrew Brunette, they've played better out here against them. I think they took them to overtime last year. They have two games in this building this year. But this is going to be a really interesting test because the Oilers, as great as those guys are, and they're both having, you know, the typical seasons for them. Draisaitl's got 57 points in 42 games. Connor McDavid's got a 15-game point streak. He's got 72 points.
He's killing
in 42
it.
Games.
He's killing it.
He's incredible.
It's absolutely incredible.
But despite that, they've won less than half of their games. They're only 4 points ahead of the Predators.
Because they have no depth. They have absolutely zero depth.
So that is what you have to do. When they are not on the ice, this is what's unlike the NBA where LeBron James or Michael Jordan, pick your superstar. Those guys are going to be out there for 40 minutes at least out of a 48-minute game. Those guys are on the ice for 25 minutes or so, a little bit less than half the game. You've got to get it done when they're not on the ice if you want to be successful against the Oilers. And you can't let them completely take over and have a great day at the playground.
By the way, old friend Connor Ingram will be starting in net for the Edmonton Oilers tonight against the Predators. Again, that is an 8 p.m. puck drop, 7 p.m. pregame right here on 102.5 The Game. 615-737-1025. Since we were talking to Barry Trotz, some more news has emerged regarding John Harbaugh, who has been fired by the Baltimore Ravens. We will bring that to you coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you. Willie Donick off to the rink in Edmonton, where the Predators will take on the Oilers tonight in the final game of their road trip. That's an 8 o'clock central puck drop, 7 o'clock pregame right here on 102.5 The Game. The major news of the day in the NFL. The Baltimore Ravens have fired John Harbaugh after 18 seasons. It has been made official within the past 30 minutes or so. Some new reporting from Adam Schefter. First, John Harbaugh is expected to emerge as a favorite for the head coaching job of the New York Giants. Harbaugh will be in demand for many teams, not just the Giants. Schefter adds, in the first 45 minutes after Harbaugh was fired this afternoon, his agent, Brian Harlan, said he received calls from seven NFL teams expressing interest in his client. There currently are seven NFL head coaching openings, including Baltimore's. That could mean teams that have head coaches are still calling about John Harbaugh, but we know the Tennessee Titans among the seven teams that have an opening. The other news of the day, far less important than that, but it actually relates to the Tennessee Titans, also according to Adam Schefter, former Cowboys head coach and NBC analyst Jason Garrett is interviewing Friday for the Titans head coach opening. So here are the scheduled interviews according to various reports. Colts defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo will interview with the Titans tomorrow. Chiefs offensive coordinator Matt Nagy will interview with the Titans on Thursday. Now we know Jason Garrett will interview on Friday. Former Browns coach Kevin Stefanski will interview with the Titans on Saturday. And former Falcons coach Raheem Morris will interview with the Titans next Monday, a week from yesterday. Mm-hmm. So Anarumo, Nagy, Garrett, Stefanski, and Morris, the first scheduled interviews for the Tennessee Titans. And man, people are the reaction to the Jason Garrett thing. One person asked me what the F I was on when I announced it. I was just trying to get y'all riled up. Jason Garrett, look, again, Jason Garrett coached 10 seasons in the NFL with the Dallas Cowboys, won 56% of his games, 55.9% to be exact, 85-67 over 10 years with the Dallas Cowboys, 5 playoff appearances, 2 wins. But the one thing, look, I need a Cowboys expert. I can't wait to hear what Chase McCabe has to say about this tomorrow on Chase and Big Joe because he is a Cowboys fan. Mm-hmm. But the one, whenever there's a sizable gap in coaching, Derek, it always gives me pause. Not to say that Jason Garrett couldn't coach in the NFL again, but he hasn't been an NFL coach in more than 6 years. So whenever I see a gap that large, I tend to put my hand up and go, I know with Jason Garrett, people were like, I would put my hand up regardless. Mm-hmm. But when I see a gap that long, Am I wrong to be a bit cautious about that?
No, you're not. I think there are other teams that would be cautious of that. It's not like Jason Garrett, you know, is a Super Bowl winning head coach. And, you know, he did all these great things while in Dallas. And they were in the NFC Championship game. None of those things happened. Now, was he a good coach? Yeah, he was a good coach. But his teams never reached the potential that, well, hell, I think Dallas fans, they think every year is the year. So I guess every year they never, no matter who's the head coach, since Jimmy Johnson, they have not. The season has been a disappointment. But is he a good coach or was he a good coach? Yeah, but there's a reason why he got fired, okay? And it's been 5 years and nobody has hired him. Nobody. Now, a part of it could have been him having a cushy gig and, you know, there's less pressure in that realm than it is as a head coach. It could be that, or it could be teams are like, nah, your time came and it went, and we're not backtracking. And this may be something that his agent now is putting out. And, you know, hopefully he can get more interviews in this wave. Because they're, you know, how many coaching vacancies were there last year?
That's a good question. I'll have to look that up. 1 second.
So there's seven. As we sit now, there's seven.
Correct. So last year, here are the new coaches from last season. Mike Vrabel in New England. Liam Cohen in Jacksonville. Ben Johnson in Chicago. Brian Schottenheimer in Dallas. Kellen Moore in New Orleans. Aaron Glenn with the Jets. And Pete Carroll with the Raiders. So that's seven. First-year coaches
so
with their
new team. So it's
seven
now, and it could be more. And this agent may be looking at it as, okay, this may be a time because there's seven now and there could be two or three more where the pool is open. There's, you know, the pool has become bigger with jobs available. So why not put my hat in the ring and see what happens? So, you know, maybe it could be that. But if I'm the Titans, I'm not sure, you know, would he be a realistic candidate for the head coaching job?
I should correct the record. Jason Garrett has not been a head coach since 2019. He didn't make it through two seasons with the Giants as their offensive coordinator. He was fired in November of 2021, less than 2 years on the job as Giants offensive coordinator.
See, and that
he was on Joe Judge's staff.
That may be another contributing factor why he hasn't gotten the job. It's like, okay, you got fired, and then you take an OC job, and you get fired again after 2 years, which means you were not doing a good job, or your coaching staff wasn't doing a good job. I'm not – why do I need – at least for the Titans, why am I interviewing you to be a serious candidate for this job? I'm not doing that.
Well, isn't it also doing your research?
Yeah.
Right? Like just because – like I know what you said earlier, that if I – your opinion is if the Titans have no intention of hiring someone that they're interviewing, don't interview them. But yeah. – It could be a fact-finding mission.
Yeah.
Maybe you're hiring them for a different position. Maybe you will hire them down the road. You're just trying to gather some more information. This is from the ESPN story back in 2021 when the Giants fired Jason Garrett as their offensive coordinator. Quote, Garrett's offense scored the fewest touchdowns of any team since the start of last season, meaning 2020. The Giants hired him in January 2020 after he had a long stint as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. It had been 7 years since Garrett had called plays before returning to New York. He never hit a stride with the Giants despite a strong relationship with Daniel Jones.
See, and that's what teams, I don't think, you know, at this point, I would be surprised if he got a coaching job, especially this cycle. And this may be the cycle where there may be the most coaching jobs available. It's seven now, just like it was last year, but there could potentially be one or two more.
What other jobs do you think could come open?
Let me see. Well, Pittsburgh, I mean, you don't know if he – I know Mike Tomlin made it into the playoffs.
Yes.
But it was by the skin of his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not advocating for – Tomlin to get fired in Pittsburgh. But what if they get just blown out?
By the Texans.
By the Texans. That's not – just because you made it to the playoffs doesn't mean that your job is safe. Hell, we saw that some years ago here.
Yes.
With the Titans.
Yep.
So it doesn't mean – especially there's been a lot, you know, circulating around Mike Tomlin every – you know, for the last 3 or 4 years.
The other one, too – I think I heard Mike McDaniel say, I'm going to be the coach until they tell me I'm not. But I wonder about the Dolphins.
The Dolphins is another.
I don't know if there's been any reporting that he is absolutely staying. Mm-hmm. But the Dolphins are one. Aaron Glenn, I believe, is safe. I don't know if the Jets. Okay, I don't know if the Jets
Cincinnati said Taylor is safe.
Taylor
He's coming back.
Zach Taylor is coming back.
So there may
I wonder about Miami. That's the one that sticks out to me.
Two jobs that may end up coming available. So, listen – if, you know, he may get another interview or two or three because of the amount of jobs that are open. But, you know, if I'm the Titans, realistically, am I looking to hire Jason Garrett? No.
No.
But I get what you're saying from the standpoint of, because I said, even though I thought, you know, listen, every organization has to satisfy the Rooney Rule. Every organization has to. When you have a coaching vacancy, I believe every organization has to, whether they're doing it because of that or not. You have to. All right. So my thing is, would it – I don't know. It's just, to me, for me.
What Dexter says, while you think about that, what Dexter says, out of every single coaching candidate that has been named, Garrett is the only one where if they hired him, I'll quit being a Titans fan.
Well, yeah.
And what Dexter said, people need to relax. It's just an interview. Yes, that's absolutely true.
And that is what I'm saying.
But it's fun to get you
people
all excited.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, listen, they're going to bring people in here that they feel they got to, you know, interview because, you know, like I said, satisfying whatever rule that is out there. And then there are going to be other guys, like you said, that they, you know, both, you know, that they bring in because they want to know a little bit more about this person. Maybe they don't hire him as their head coach. They did the same thing a couple of years ago with, before they hired Vrabel.
LaFleur?
Yeah, they hired they interviewed LaFleur for the head coaching job. Well, they didn't give him the head coaching job, but he became the offensive coordinator. Now, I don't recommend that. Probably wouldn't be the best thing, you know. You should let your head coach be the guy that wants to bring in a coordinator that they see eye to eye with. But it could be a situation where they're bringing in, you know, a Raheem Morris or a Vance and see, okay, maybe if you're not our head coach, you can be a defensive coordinator. You can, you know, be whatever. It would be nothing less than a defensive coordinator. But yeah, we're interviewing you. Yes, we're choosing to go a different direction, but you can be the defensive coordinator. So, I mean, that could happen.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the upcoming interviews, as been reported multiple places. Colts defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo tomorrow. Chiefs offensive coordinator Matt Nagy on Thursday. Jason Garrett on Friday. Former Browns coach Kevin Stefanski on Saturday. Former Falcons coach Raheem Morris next Monday. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show. Take your reaction. Coming up next, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Kane is in the building.
D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. A reminder, the Predators wrap up their road trip tonight in Edmonton against Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and the Oilers. Puck drop at 8, pregame at 7, right here on 102.5 The Game. The Predators will be back in town tomorrow. Then they open a 4-game homestand, if I am not mistaken, on Thursday. Yes, a 4-game homestand on Thursday. So we'll be back at Bridgestone Arena on Thursday for the first time in like a month, it feels like. So it'll be nice to be back there. The Predators, one more game on the road trip. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Jeff. Jeff, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. I hope you all have a wonderful New Year.
You as well.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you. Let's assume Mike Tomlin becomes available. okay? So who is your choice for head coach? Tomlin or Harbaugh? I'll hang up and listen and have a wonderful day, gentlemen.
Thank you, Jeff. All right, Derek. I'll leave that one to you.
And this is where, when I say when all is equal, you may lean more toward the relationship part. I'm leaning toward John. I think Mike Tomlin is great. I mean, hell, his resume speaks for itself. But again, it's that personal relationship. If I was GM now, but now look, looking at the Titans as a whole in this team, because of what I said about Harbaugh earlier, I think he, in my personal opinion, I think a year off, re-energizing, and then getting back, you will get the best John Harbaugh, I think. Not to say that he will, if he got a job now, which I think he will, if he chooses to coach, you still wouldn't get a good John Harbaugh. But I think a year off, you'll get the best. So with that being said, I may, just because of that, Mike Tomlin. But my bias, I do have a bias toward John Harbaugh, obviously. I think personally maybe he should take a year off and then come back. But either one of those guys, and I know the caller said pick one person, but either one of those guys would be wonderful here, I think. I think they would, you know, revitalize this organization.
So once again, the scheduled list of interviews for the Tennessee Titans over the next number of days. Lou Anarumo, Colts DC tomorrow. Chiefs OC, Matt Nagy on Thursday. Browns coach, ex-Browns coach, Kevin Stefanski on Saturday. Oops, I forgot one. Jason Garrett on Friday. Stefanski on Saturday. Former Falcons coach Raheem Morris on Sunday. So John Harbaugh skyrockets to the top of the list of the best available coaches. Sorry, Kevin Stefanski. And Kevin Stefanski is interesting. We had a texter ask about Stefanski. So I saw this from Bill Barnwell of ESPN, trying to put Kevin Stefanski's tenure in Cleveland in context. Bill Barnwell said this: Kevin Stefanski with the Browns, 45-56. That's a .446 winning percentage. 2 playoff appearances, 1 playoff win. The other 11 Browns 2.0 coaches combined, 101-234. That's a .301 winning percentage. 1 playoff appearance, 0 playoff wins. Let me read to you quickly a list of the quarterbacks for the Browns post-Baker Mayfield. Oh, boy. Deshaun Watson, Jacoby Brissett, Joe Flacco, Jameis Winston, Shedeur Sanders, Dylan Gabriel, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, P.J. Walker, Jeff Driskel, and Bailey Zappe.
The who's who of quarterbacks, not.
Whatever the opposite of that is. And that's the one thing with Kevin Stefanski. Again, Kevin Stefanski is interviewing with the Titans on Saturday. That's the one thing that a lot of us are trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. Did Kevin Stefanski do the best he could with the resources he had? The Browns traded every draft pick known to man for Deshaun Watson. Did Kevin Stefanski going 45-56, is that the best you could expect from Kevin Stefanski considering the personnel at his disposal? Is it the Cleveland stank that's all over him? I know you've said this before, Derek. How much of it is on Stefanski? How much of it is on the Cleveland Browns? Again, without knowing everything that's going on in Cleveland, Ohio, I think a lot of people would lean toward the fact that the Cleveland Browns are the Cleveland Browns. And the fact that Stefanski was, what, a 2-time coach of the year with the Cleveland Browns and was only 11 games under .500? Yes, his offense certainly did not thrive in recent years, and that's supposed to be his calling card. But again, do I need to read the list of quarterbacks? Yes. Are you going to win games? I mean, look, he got Joe Flacco off the couch, and he won the Comeback Player of the Year award. So give him some credit for that. But when you've got Deshaun Watson, and I don't even know if
the land, you know that
who is Jeff Driscoll?
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard that name. He's been around the league. But mm-hmm. Jeff Driscoll? You're expecting someone to win with Jeff Driscoll as your quarterback?
It's like, what was that, in the land of the misfit toys?
The island of misfit toys.
The
island of
misfit toys. Yeah, this is the island of
misfit quarterbacks.
Misfit quarterbacks,
yeah,
in
bad.
A sense. And listen, the organization as a whole, meaning Cleveland, they haven't given their fan base any hope in the last 10 years. I wonder how, but again, in this, and I'm only looking at this situation. I'm not looking at the umpteen quarterbacks they had, you know, in the organization and, you know, the three or four he had to play with in Chicago or here. It's how, like, that situation with the quarterbacks, how much of that was you or how much of that was the organization? Because, again, that just – the way that all played out, whether you are a Gabriel fan or Gabriel Dillon fan or Shedeur Sanders fan or Joe Flacco fan or Deshaun, it doesn't matter how that whole thing was handled with the quarterbacks at the beginning of the season. I think it was just odd. So how much of that was Stefanski, or was it the organization that was really pulling the strings and he was just the puppet? And he was just, okay, I'm doing whatever they tell me. So that's what I would want to know.
I feel like if you're Browns fans, though, you would like go back to 1999.
Yeah.
They haven't found the quarterback. I mean, there's still that jersey that goes around every year that has a quarterback from 1999 for the Browns into now. And it's a long list. It covers the jersey.
Yeah, and that's the sign of a organization that has not operated in a winning fashion. Now, listen, they've been to the playoffs since 99, from 99 to now, a few times, but it was never anything sustainable for that franchise, and the quarterback position wasn't sustainable for that franchise. So you throw Stefanski in there, and he wins two-time coach of the year. He's two-time coach of the year in Cleveland. But then you have this whole, you know, dumpster fire of a quarterback, whatever they call it. It just didn't make sense. So how much of that was you, or if it was you, or was it the organization, and they were just – you know, pulling the strings and you couldn't do anything about it?
The track record would seem to suggest that it's more the organization than Kevin Stefanski. And that doesn't mean that Kevin Stefanski is blameless in what happened mm-hmm. in Cleveland. But I do think a lot of people are pointing toward the ineptitude of the franchise versus the coach. Ricky says, as a Jets fan, Robert Saleh, this guy was excellent. Can't help that Aaron Rodgers ruined the team and then sucked with all his friends around him. Mm-hmm. And then he had Zach Wilson as quarterback. Great defense, did well, like him a lot. I do think Robert Saleh is going to be at the top of a lot of people's lists. We talked about what Mike Borgonzi said, and one of the maybe breadcrumbs he gave us today at his news conference, he talked about accountability and being demanding and all of those things. And from afar, it appears that Robert Saleh is that kind of guy. And look, it's hard to – we know that Aaron Rodgers, you know, I can't think of another word to describe it. He's sort of a black hole, right? Everything – like he absorbs everything around him. And there were a lot of headlines about Saleh and Rodgers not showing up to training camp or mandatory mini camp or whatever the hell it was because he was in like Egypt or something. I don't remember what it was. But I think Saleh rehabbed his image working with the San Francisco 49ers. He can't interview yet because the 49ers play in the playoffs this weekend. I imagine once the 49ers are out or he is eligible to interview, his name is going to pop up everywhere. But I do think that people looking for the mm-hmm. alpha type, I mean, have you seen Robert Saleh? The man has been chiseled out of stone. So
he had to get that jet stank off of him.
Yes.
So he had to go back home to San Fran.
Yes. He's one of the like if I'm putting together a roster of like if I'm at a bar, a crowded bar, and I have to pick three NFL head coaches to help me out of this bar with my life. Robert Saleh, like three NFL coaches, whether it's a head coach or not. Mm-hmm. Robert Saleh is probably on my short list. Mike Vrabel's definitely on that list. Dan Campbell. But Saleh's on that list. Saleh, I think, could crush some skulls.
Kneecappers. So, right. They go after the kneecaps.
Right. No, well, Campbell's going for the kneecaps. Saleh's going for the skull crushing. So, I mean, that again, this is all from afar. Mm-hmm. I imagine that Saleh will be on the short list. But huge news in the NFL today. John Harbaugh fired after 18 years. And look, everybody runs their course. Mm-hmm. But nearly 20 years coaching in any sport nowadays is unheard of. I mean, with the turnover. I mean, Pete Carroll, I know Pete Carroll is old. But Pete Carroll lasted one season in Las Vegas. And shout out to John Harbaugh. Nearly 20 years. That's outstanding, rare longevity. He'll have a job tomorrow if he wants it.
Listen, that organization, Baltimore, sort of like Pittsburgh, they've only had so many owners, so many GMs, and so many head coaches. Baltimore has, since they moved back to Baltimore, they've only had three coaches, I believe. Two. They only had
three coaches.
Yeah, it was three. Marshall Broda, and that was early on when they first moved back there, and then Billick, and then John. Pittsburgh is the same way. So you're talking, and GMs. They only had two GMs, and that was Ozzie and then DaCosta now. That stability, that, you know, having a winning organization. But, I mean, after being there 18 years, your time comes. And, you know, an organization or the coach has to make a decision. Just like New England made a decision with Bill Belichick. Now the Baltimore Ravens have made a decision with John Harbaugh. And we will see where he lands. And I know a bunch of people in Nashville hope that, you know, his final destination is here in Nashville. So we'll see.
That'll do it for us today. We'll be back at 3 o'clock tomorrow, as will Willie Donick. Willie's been out of town for like a month. It's not really been a month, but it feels like a month. But he will be back tomorrow, live and in living color in Nashville, Tennessee. We can't wait to see our friend Willie Donick. The Predators have one more road game tonight, 8 p.m. puck drop against the Edmonton Oilers, 7 p.m. pregame, right here on 102.5 The Game. Have a wonderful evening. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3.
Be love, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. See you tomorrow at 3 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Peace.